I'm Jim Benson, co-author with Scott Skelton of Rod Serling's Night Gallery and After Hours Tour. Originally scheduled to air on November 5th, 1972, The Ring with the Red Velvet Ropes was preempted by a football game between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Oakland Raiders, falling victim to NBC's deliberate attempt to sabotage Night Gallery using a series of frequent preemptions to guarantee low ratings and give the network the opportunity to cancel the series in order to expand the NBC mystery movie to 2 hours. The Ring with the Red Velvet Ropes ultimately aired in the dead of winter on January 7, 1973, 2 months after NBC officially killed Rod Serling's Night Gallery. Having been a boxer during World War II, Rod Serling frequently joked about how he appeared on camera, as we'll hear in this clip.
Delivering Jeopardy-laden lines through gritted teeth, like a man suffering the twin despair of lockjaw and novocaine in the upper lip, and I look like an over-the-hill, aging, Sicilian, constipated prize fighter.
Tom Wright decided to change geometric perspective in this particular painting, as the artist explains.
The Ring with the Red Velvet Ropes. What different can I do here? A boxer. But the painting is done with a boxer. Red velvet ropes and symbols. This ring and boxer are on an even plane. Why? Hope you want to find out. Fun to do, acrylic on masonite, and lots of thought.
Okay, man.
Just hold on.
Give us a break, boys. Listen, fellas, press conference tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock. All right, hurry up, please. Tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock in the hotel. Got all the time you want.
All right.
Okay, so long.
Only 4 years removed from playing astronaut Frank Poole in Stanley Kubrick's science fiction masterpiece 2001, A Space Odyssey, Gary Lockwood was cast as fighter Jim Figg in Rod Serling's Night Gallery, as Gary Lockwood recalls.
You know, I can look back in my life and say that casting was done according to your skills, but after enough years in the business, I won't ever say that anymore. Yeah, and I was I boxed as a kid, and I'm kind of a tough ass. I think casting is based on the best, most popular guy we can get. Now, casting is not because a casting agent has some brilliant stroke of luck. It's all a business deal. The whole goddamn business is a business deal. Gary Lockwood does X amount of things, and he, fortunately, can play a fighter. Otherwise, it would have been Fabian. If I'm capable of playing a fighter, and I also have X amount of juice at the moment, then I'm the guy. If it's better to get somebody else than me, who happens to be frail and can't fight, but he's so hot, believe me, I'd be dropped in a second. That's the way the business works. There's only a few guys in my life that I've ever seen cast with integrity. That's Kubrick and Kazan. I was under contract Kazan, and I knew Kubrick. I mean, and Kubrick cast me to do 2001. Of all the times I've been in this business, I've only ever seen that a couple of times.
I just saw it.
One of Jeannot Zwark's last assignments on Night Gallery, The Ring with the Red Velvet Ropes, was the director's attempt to create a kind of supernatural body and soul. The segment turned out to be one of Zwark's favorite episodes from the third season, and also featured one of the director's favorite effects, as Jeannot Zwark explains.
Oh, that was terrific. I thought that was a good one. Yeah, I remember. I think that was one of my last ones, as a matter of fact. Great sets and an incredible look. And I remember there was a transition where he comes out of the shower and he's in another room. Yeah, we did a redress, which means that I went in, we stopped, locked the camera, and then they redid the other side, and he came out, and we're on another set.
The melding of the fight world with the world of the supernatural in The Ring with the Red Velvet Ropes would have been the perfect Night Gallery script for Rod Serling to pen, but instead, producer Jack Laird farmed out this tale to veteran TV writer Robert Malcolm Young. Serling was catapulted to superstardom when his now-classic story, Requiem for a Heavyweight, aired on Playhouse 90 in 1956, one of his personal favorites, as Rod Serling recalls.
Well, it's my favorite in that I put more of myself into it. It was a story of a composite of fighters that I've known, and I did some fighting myself. I have the unique distinction of being the only fighter who had to be carried both in and out of the ring. I used to fight as a catchweight in Golden Gloves and in the service. But my trainer and two or three other major league fighters are all very much characterized in the show. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed it. Playhouse 90, lately lamented and departed, was an exceptionally fine program. Mm-hmm. And they did some marvelous things on the show.
Surprisingly, Edgar D. Hoke's original short story had no supernatural trappings. Roderick Blanco is a wealthy, talented, and pathologically unbalanced amateur boxer who kidnaps the heavyweight champion and forces him into a match, a story that wouldn't have been out of place on Alfred Hitchcock Presents. In Robert Malcolm Young's unearthly adaptation, Jim Figg's strange destiny is telegraphed long before the end, thanks to the less than cryptic insinuations of the dialogue. Gary Lockwood is well known to fans of science fiction and the supernatural. In 1966, Lockwood starred in the second pilot of the original Star Trek TV series as Lieutenant Commander Gary Mitchell in the episode Where No Man Has Gone Before. And in 1968, Lockwood was cast in the classic film 2001: A Space Odyssey. Gary Lockwood played lead roles in two TV series in the 1960s, Follow the Sun on ABC, and The Lieutenant, playing Lieutenant William Rice for one season on NBC, as the actor recalls.
You know, to be very honest, playing a second lieutenant in those days was a piece of cake. I was athletic, and I was a pretty bright student. And, you know, I got along fine with the Marines. You know, the officers liked me, and I didn't make them look bad. You know, and the people that I worked for were very nice, and Roddenberry, who did Star Trek, directed, produced it. I did the pilot for Star Trek for that very reason. We had a lot of Marine Corps cooperation making it. We sort of pulled away from them toward the end. We made a very nice story on Vietnam, ahead of its time. That's when they had advisors in there. So I go to Vietnam and the story is an advisor and I kill someone. Yeah, it was a very nice show. It's one of the best television shows I've ever done, that particular segment.
I happen to be, as of last night.
Cast in June of 1972 by casting director Ross Brown, at the time, Joan Van Ark was starring as Nurse Annie Carlisle in the ABC TV situation comedy Temperatures Rising. While shooting The Ring with the Red Velvet Ropes, Joan Van Ark experienced her own temperatures rising working with Gary Lockwood and Chuck Connors, as Joan Van Ark recalls.
Well, what a wonderful dilemma for a blonde to have. No, seriously, and you can quote me on that. What a wonderful dilemma to be caught between these two paragons, in a way, and icons as actors, especially Chuck Connors, because come on.
For Gary Lockwood, working with director Jeannot Zwark and co-star Joan Van Ark was an easygoing, positive experience, as the actor describes.
Well, I thought he was a very professional guy, and I thought that, you know, he knew exactly what he was doing. I belong to the Bob Mitchum school, man. Get the shit on the paper and get out of here. And, very honestly, I think those are the best actors. Have a good time, let's work hard and get out of here. Well, I would say it was meat and potatoes in terms of doing the work. There were certain lines here and there that were sort of fun. There were lines that I had, you know, where I, what the hell's going on or whatever, you know. And the girl that was opposite me was very attractive, and she did it. I thought she was a good actress. As regards that, I would say that, you know, there was the right feelings at the right times, yeah.
10 years. You don't look like you could have been married that long.
Author Ed Hoke was paid $1,000 by producer Jack Laird for the rights to his short story, originally entitled The Ring with the Velvet Ropes. Hoke remarked that the powers that be at NBC Universal thought that the red was more bloody or something. Hoke was rather philosophical about his story's title being changed, the genre being changed, and his ending being changed. The author figured that if the show was good, he'd take credit for it. If the show was bad, he'd blame it on the TV people.
But I'll tell you one thing, lady. I'm ready.
Hoke's main concern for The Ring with the Red Velvet Ropes was that with the presidential election only 2 days away, NBC would preempt his episode for pre-election political blandness. NBC did indeed preempt Night Gallery that night, following their unofficial yet regularly implemented policy of preempting the third season of Night Gallery as many times as possible. Cast in the summer of 1972 to play the larger-than-life and seemingly immortal prizefighter Roderick Blanco, Chuck Connors was best known for playing Lucas McCain in the classic TV series The Rifleman, which ran on ABC from 1958 through 1963. Robert Malcolm Young's rather regal Blanco and Chuck Connors' imperious presence are in stark contrast to the true reality of prizefighters, as Rod Serling explained.
In many bars, they have what they call the dying room, where all the old fighters would congregate, and they would literally fight away their lives, recollecting fights. And a guy would say, Levinsky. I know Levinsky. I fought him in Syracuse. And there was another guy named Gibbons, and I fought him. And you hear this funny prattle that goes on. Your initial instinct is to laugh until suddenly you begin to carefully peruse these people, and you begin to realize there are certain strange effects. Number one, they are gentle. Number two, they are loving, as if all the violence had been expended in rings and all that was left was the capacity to care for one another. They were also linked by a terrible tragedy that all of them were only 50% there.
Chuck Connors was born in Brooklyn, New York on April 10, 1921. A talented athlete, Connors went to Seton Hall University on an athletic scholarship. After serving in the U.S. Army during World War II, Chuck Connors played for the Boston Celtics in the NBA from 1946 to 1948, and then played first base for the Brooklyn Dodgers and the Chicago Cubs from 1949 to 1951. Chuck Connors always had a bit of showman in him, even on the baseball diamond, where once after hitting a home run, Connors decided to have a conversation with the umpire, saunter around the bases, and slide into second base in place of the traditional home run trot. Connors decided to parlay his showmanship into an acting career, and after he was spotted by an MGM casting director, became one of the busiest actors in Hollywood. Like Chuck Connors, Rod Serling was a natural athlete, and his passion was for the sport of boxing, which led to his creation of Requiem for a Heavyweight, as Rod Serling recalled.
I had a strong affinity for the sport. I wrote it first as a short story in college, based on characters that I knew in the Army. When I started writing it as a Playhouse 90, it was going to be a novel. And then as I got into it, I began to realize that the scenes were so visual. And every fight arena I'd ever been in, St. Nick's, the Newark, New Jersey things, Madison Square as it used to be, with that funny pall of blue smoke that hung over everything, you never saw anything clearly and discernible. Everything was always clouded in blue smoke that came from 8 million nickel cigars. And this stench permeated every piece of wood in the place. It smelled of sweat, liniment, cigar smoke, blood, human blood, all the things that are the built-in accoutrements to an awfully dirty racket.
After The Rifleman left the air in 1963, Chuck Connors starred in three TV series during that decade. ABC's Arrest and Trial, which was the precursor to the classic Law & Order NBC TV franchise, the post-Civil War series Branded, and a contemporary outdoor series, Cowboy in Africa, which aired on ABC for one season in 1967. Following Night Gallery, Connors continued as a very busy character actor, co-starring in the classic ABC miniseries Roots, also starring in the 1983 Dallas-type drama The Yellow Rose, and in 1987, co-starring in the short-lived Fox horror series Werewolf. Connors also starred in the classic 1973 science fiction film Soylent Green, and in 1982, he was cast for a comedic turn in Airplane 2, the sequel.
But to the earlier one.
Like many of his generation, Chuck Connors was a lifelong smoker and succumbed to lung cancer in 1992. He was 71 years old.
Flyleaf and Big Dan's affidavit.
Gerald Perry Finnerman, who worked as director of photography on the last half of Night Gallery's second season and lends the majority of the third season episodes, brought a rather gothic and much darker look to the series.
Winner
As featured in the previous scene with Chuck Connors berating Gary Lockwood, Finnerman frequently used a lighting effect using a snoot, a conical attachment fitted to a studio light to concentrate the beam on the actor's face and eyes. In addition to being an extraordinary DP, Finnerman was also a bit of a taskmaster, as Night Gallery director John Badham explains.
Jerry, who had been the original cinematographers on Star Trek, you know, had very talented DP, and a very tough DP, too. He ran a really tough ship, and his guys really hopped to it. And when he said jump, boy, it was all how high, because you didn't want to get on his bad side. But that's good. That's all right. That's kind of what you expected from the old-fashioned cameramen who were a generation older than Jerry, even. Those are the ones that probably taught him.
Yeah, how do you get an outside line?
Born in Los Angeles, California, on February 21, 1937, Gary Lockwood attended UCLA on a football scholarship and played quarterback for the UCLA Bruins. Growing up, Lockwood loved movies and was inspired to become an actor by the multitude of films he enjoyed as a young man, as Lockwood recalls.
I grew up in a small town, and my family were pretty wealthy, and I had the wherewithal to get to the movies, but I mean, I didn't have the wherewithal to get to civilization all the time. So the movies were my connection to the outside world. And there were all kinds of movies passed my way, and once in a while, like an arty kind of intelligent movie would come through, and I would just, you know, my whole level of consciousness would be raised. I fortunately did read books as a boy as well, so, you know, but I never considered books and movies to be in the same genre.
After Night Gallery, Gary Lockwood mainly concentrated on television work. Throughout the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, the actor appeared in such series as Mission Impossible, Ironside, The $6 Million Man, The Bionic Woman, Charlie's Angels, MacGyver, Superboy, and was a frequent guest star on Angela Lansbury's classic mystery series, Murder, She Wrote.
Let him win.
Best known for playing Val Ewing from 1978 to 1993 on the classic nighttime soaps Dallas and Knott's Landing, Joan Van Ark's career was just beginning to blossom in the early 1970s. Although only 29 at the time, Van Ark's memories of Night Gallery and director Jeannot's work are quite vivid, as the actress remembers.
But this one, Jeannot, that's a heavy hitter, no pun intended. but he's got incredible credits, and he was wonderful. I was thrilled to work with such an accomplished director. Jeannot is boy, he knows his stuff. Big time.
The Ring with the Red Velvet Ropes was edited by Robert F. Shugru and is one of the finest episodes of the series in terms of editing. His only job on Night Gallery, Shugru synchronizes his edits with the violent action on the screen, combining quick cuts, creating visual punctuations as though the audience is getting punched in the face. Shugru was frequently honored for his outstanding editing work, nominated for 4 Emmy Awards over the course of his career, and was an Emmy winner for the 1982 miniseries starring Ingrid Bergman, A Woman Called Golda. With an impossibly tight production schedule, director Jeannot's work was forced to send this fictional fight into overtime and shoot well into the night, as co-star Joan Van Ark recalls.
I just remember Universal's the closest studio to us, being up literally night for night shooting. But it was a tall order because literally, you know, from I don't know what the set call was, but let's say it was 7 or 8 o'clock at night, if that, maybe a little earlier, but it literally went all night long.
When offered the role of Roderick Blanco, Connor said, "Yes, siree. I dig, I dig, I dig." Chuck Connor's enthusiasm for The Ring with the Red Velvet Ropes partly stemmed from his affection for the classic 1949 boxing film Champion, starring Kirk Douglas as a pugilist who will stop at nothing to get to the top. At the time, Connor said, "The Ring with the Red Velvet Ropes is about getting there and staying there. It's about fear and the fact that sooner or later, something will topple you, death old age, circumstances, or someone else. For co-stars Joan Van Ark and Gary Lockwood, their recollections of shooting The Ring with the Red Velvet Ropes seems to exist in alternate realities, as the actors describe their respective experiences.
The only thing I remember, and vividly, was the all-nightness of it and just how kind of loopy Gary got, and understandably so. The thing was, he got really punchy, and it was hard on him because he was getting beaten up and had dialogue and all kinds of stuff. So he got punchier and punchier as the night went on. And, you know, bleary, and I don't blame him. I mean, that was a tough call.
Ray, with the Red Velvet Rope, we didn't have that hardcore boxing stuff. It was a little bit different in that Chuck Connors is a very good athlete. I'm a good athlete. And so it was not that difficult to do. You have two very good athletes playing boxers. It's a lot different. If you have one good athlete and another non-athlete, and one non-athlete's playing, it's very difficult. Chuck was an excellent athlete, and he and I worked very easily. It was not difficult at all. You know, maybe you have to do it over because camera makes errors, actors make errors, lighting goes awry, things like that. But we didn't do long, arduous, we can't get it done takes. No, I can remember.
Despite the episode's title, The Ring with the Red Velvet Ropes features very little of an element always found in a boxing match, as Night Gallery makeup artist Leonard Engelman explains.
From the time they get into the third round, you just see a lot of stomach punching and a lot of footwork and stuff. And it was like, you know, I did Rocky IV. So Rocky IV, you saw them getting hit, you saw them getting cut, you saw them getting bruised, you saw them bleeding. In Ropes, you didn't see them bleeding. Reason being, censorship, you couldn't show blood.
As shooting continued well into the wee hours of the morning, Night Gallery almost became lights out for Gary Lockwood, as Joan Van Ark remembers.
I remember giggling a lot because probably I was getting punchy too. And, you know, it was grueling for these two fighters to be doing all of that. So you didn't get goofy because it was serious stuff if you're doing one of those episodes. As the night went on, I'm afraid a few of them may have landed. You're doing this over and over again, and it's pretty brutal. I mean, it's brutal just in and of itself. And then you add the fight aspect, where you need precision so you don't really knock somebody in the, you know, kind of ring the chimes, so to speak. So, I don't know. It was unique.
Frankie Van, a former boxer himself, was cast as the referee judging Blanco and Figg's high-stakes match, and he also doubled as on-set technical advisor for the fight scenes. Although an avid boxing fan, while on set, Chuck Connors said he wouldn't be interested in participating in the sport himself. For the 6'6" tall actor, filming The Ring with the Red Velvet Ropes was enough. It's physically too brutalizing, said Connors. It's better being an actor. Only one man can be on top in boxing. It's not a perch to sit on too long. There's a better chance of becoming a star as an actor. There are many stars. For makeup artist Leonard Engelman, creating the mummified Roderick Blanco really wasn't much of a stretch. Or was it?
That at the time would have been liquid rubber, what they call stretch and stipple. So you put the rubber on, you stretch the skin as much as possible, you use a blow dry, you blow it. When it dries, then the skin comes together and forms all of the different wrinkles and such.
Although not in the same heavyweight class as many of the episodes in Night Gallery's first two seasons, The Ring with the Red Velvet Ropes is an exceptionally fond memory for all of the artists involved, especially Joan Van Ark.
Because that was a respected, very special show, and it's kind of like TV history. It's justified because it was an iconic, special show that gave actors a wonderful, I don't want to say exercise, but a challenge, and in a way an exercise. And for that, as an actress, I'm, you know, I'm very grateful to have ever been a part of it.
For how long?
As long as you win.